The Writers Guild of America, who represents over 12,000 film, television, radio writers, have just marked their second month on labor dispute against the Alliance of Motion Picture and Television Producers, a trade organization representing the interests of 397 American film and television producers. It is estimated by some sources that the strike has cost over $1 billion to the entertainment industry and all those involved in the industry. Today we have Nancy De Los Santos, a writer and a member of the WGA board, and a strike leader, she just told me, and member of the Latino Writers Committee. Her written credits have included documentaries and shows on PBS, CBS, Lifetime, Showtime, and many other major channels. Welcome, Nancy, to the show.
Thank you, Manuel, but I would rather be writing.
I bet you would. Well, why don't we start there, Nancy? You know, as I see that you've been a member of the Guild for 8 years, but I'm assuming you've been a writer pretty much all your life, I'm assuming, since the, you know, that's something that all of us are born with or not born with at times. Why don't you just start off by telling us how you and your guild members holding off, and, you know, and how is this strike transforming your life and, you know, also transforming your consciousness, I bet.
Yes, it has transformed my life from a writer to a strike captain. And I'm a very proud member of this union and of this guild. And I know that this union, this guild of writers, is probably the most important organization in my life right now. I come from a very strong union family. My father was a member of the truck mechanics union in Chicago, so I know what strikes are all about, and I wanted to do everything we possibly could to avoid it because they are very painful for everybody involved. And I can remember as a young girl actually being on strike for a long, what would seem like a long time, and yet I asked my mom yesterday on the phone, how long was Dad on strike when we were younger? It seemed like years. And she said, it was only 2 weeks. And then we were all strike. I said, really? But it seemed so painful. And I could recall having milk for dinner and being really angry about it and saying, I want more. You know, I don't want milk for dinner. So that resonates in my mind even more. You know, I don't want milk for dinner. I want more. And we deserve more as writers. We are the creators. Everything starts with us. And I'm not putting us on a pedestal. It's very much a collaborative art. And we all know this, especially movies and television. And it's not like a writer can just write something and have it on the screen. Takes a lot of people, a lot of work, a lot of working together, a lot of collaboration. But anybody who puts their artistic selves out there should be compensated fairly. Mm-hmm. And that's writers, actors, directors, and anybody behind the scenes. Everybody should be compensated fairly.
So let's talk about at the heart of the demands have included, you know, fair and increased compensations for writers on DVDs, residuals from what is called, you know, coined, you know, new media that include internet downloads and on-demand options. I know I like to look at the latest show of The Wire or something. And important issues of jurisdiction over animation and reality TV. Why don't we give a breakdown to folks how to understand those things and what's led to the strike up to this point?
Well, residuals are probably the most important factor in a writer's life because as a writer, most of us, it has to be a huge percentage of us, are freelancers. We work job to job. We are migrant writers. You know, we move from company to company wherever the work is. So there are downtimes and there are uptimes. And I have often remembered having $13 in my bank account and the next day getting a check for $13,000. You know, but that happens once a year and then you have to live on that. And when you get paid initially for a program that you write, that's what you get paid. And there's a minimum. And I'm glad that there's a minimum because I would hate for any employer to tell any of us, this is what I think you should get paid. You know, there has to be a minimum or else I don't think any of us will be making a minimum wage. Then when that program, and that program, of course, is paid for by the advertising that you see on it, the commercials that are in it. When that program airs again, they sell commercials again. And so they get a chance to make money on it again, which is fine, as it should be. And we get a smaller portion of what we got originally. So that's a residual. And I know residuals were in question during the very beginning of the strike. I think that hopefully that has not even been a factor any longer, because we live by our residuals. The residuals come in green envelopes for the writers. And when you have a green envelope in your mail, even if it's something like $28, it's a tank full of gas.
Sure.
You know, it's lunch or dinner sometimes, because an unemployment can run out, your savings can run out, things happen, and you're not working. Mm-hmm. So residuals are very, very important to us. The DVD situation is different in that when we made the union agree to the DVD deal, which was during our last strike, I believe 1988, mm-hmm. Nobody really knew how important that was going to be to the market. Would these little silver discs take out mm-hmm. off? Would people really go and buy the cassette? Really, it started with the cassette. Would they do that? Would they buy the machine? Do they really want to see movies at home? And of course, now we all know what has happened. Yes, mm-hmm. yes, yes, yes to all those questions. And yes, they want to buy them. But since nobody was sure of what the market would be, we were asked as a union to back off and just accept mm-hmm. What we felt was not a terrific deal, because no one knew what that market would be. And we agreed. And from what I know, I was not in those negotiations, of course, they said. And then once we figure it all out, we'll get a chance to talk about it again. And of course, that time never has arrived. They don't want to talk about it again.
And since the massive boom in that industry. Yeah.
So you've heard these numbers. Everybody's heard the numbers on nauseam. I'm sure we don't want to hear them, but it's 4 cents on a DVD mm-hmm. that a writer gets for, you know, literally cutting, as one writer said, writing is easy. All you have to do is split your wrists and throw it on the paper. You know, so for throwing yourself on the paper, we get 4 cents for the DVD. And the actual jewel box costs more than what the writer gets. Mm. And that just doesn't seem fair mm-hmm. to me. You mm-hmm. know, at the core of it, it just doesn't seem fair. So we were asking for 100% increase, which is 8 cents. and I think we're still hearing no on that right now. Well, we're not hearing anything because nobody's at the table, nobody's negotiating. And please, I just want them to come back and talk to us.
Well, let's go there. I mean, so what has been, I know the aim has been to get the networks and producers to the table. It seems like you have a very strong support base. I mean, the polls show really strong mm-hmm. from a lot of people who watch TV. And I know a lot of actors also are supporting the strike in
right.
their own ways, and some are.
Oh,
going
the actors
out there.
Are with us yeah. every day on the line. Every day SAG is there, and my hat goes off to them. I embrace them strongly. They're just wonderful. They're there. Mm-hmm. They are supporting us, and mm-hmm. they know that this affects them.
And just as I know other folks, everything from technicians to actors to caterers to janitorial services, I mean, with this thing on. With this at a sort of standstill, you know, where do you think this is going, and what's been some of the tactics that you guys are trying to get these people back onto the table?
I think we are pretty much taking the high road. You mm-hmm. know, we are picketing, which is our right as citizens of these wonderful mm-hmm. United States. We picket, we picket, we picket. We're tired. Mm-hmm. Our feet are tired, but I think our spirits are strong. And I know that we are very united as writers. We're very united as a union, and we'll continue to keep picketing.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know that, you know, in some ways, I think of this as this strike as, you know, more than I've been reading about it, protection of a craft, you know, when mm-hmm. in a time when technology basically is running our life and it's changing almost overnight, it feels like, you know,
right.
over day, you feel like, what the hell just happened? You know, something's changed. Mm-hmm. How have you seen, have you contextualized this fight beyond, obviously, people getting compensated for the right thing, this concept of protection of the craft?
Well, it's a real worker struggle to me. Mm-hmm. It is. It's a writer's worker struggle. And protection of the craft is, we gave up, really, our right to own what we write. Mm-hmm. And that was given up during the 1960s, I believe, historically, by writers who said, we will not own the material if you give us and the future writers health care and a pension plan. That was a big, big give for them, mm-hmm. you know, and you have to respect people that will get up and do that. So the actual work is not protected. For example, I could write what I feel is the most magnificent script, and of course I have many times, and then you sell it to a company, and it's gone. You don't own that anymore. And if they decide not to make it, it's on a shelf and it just sits there. Mm-hmm. And you could try to buy it back, but they want to pay. The price tag will be exactly what they paid you for it. So then you're just exchanging money. And so we did, unlike the playwrights own their work. And I don't know exactly what they got for it, if they have health care or not, or, you know, which is really important. I think health care and pension plans. So there were a group of writers that came before us that gave that up. And we have to be the group of writers that look ahead. They gave that up for so I could have health care today, so I could have a pension plan. And now today we have to be the writers that stand strong and say, we're not going to give up internet. We're not, because that is how the world communicates now. Mm-hmm. Everything is on the internet. And even television will be seen through a cable, which is going to be internet. So if internet is not in the contract, do you really think they're going to pay us anyway? Mm-hmm. They're not. It has to be in the contract. It has to be written down. And that's that.
Mm-hmm. I know Christine is sort of breezing through me to tell you also that, you know, there's been at least some level of, like, the profit margin on it. The industry of internet is so outrageous that, you know, it only, again, strikes the question of why they don't want to come to the table.
Well, right now what I'm hearing, though, and I don't have all the numbers, but I've heard that at the moment, internet is not that profitable at the moment. Mm. So it really is about the future. Mm-hmm. And that's why we want to make the deal now. Mm-hmm. And the deal that we are making is a percentage, which I think is fair. You make money, we make money. Mm-hmm. It's not saying we want $50 on every time somebody watches it. No, it's like if you make $50, we make a very small percentage of that. And I think percentage is a good way to go. I can't say that it is, the internet is profitable right now. I don't know. Mm-hmm. But I know when I go to look at Desperate Housewives, there are commercials there that sure. I have to look at. And I really, really doubt, and please, if anybody's out there that has the answer to this, that those commercials are being put there out of the goodness of the network's hearts.
Absolutely not. I know Hollywood, you know, award season's coming up, and that's the big, you know, question. What's been the tactic of the Guild up to this moment around that issue? I know I breezed through one of the channels that had tried to make a show, but, you know, At Live was very hard for a lot of the actors that were trying to give the awards out, I think, for the People's Choice Award. Do you think this is going to be an important moment of hopefully of looking at the craft as a real craft and seeing the value of writers in such an important time period, at least for this industry?
Oh, yeah. I think I've watched some of those shows. And, you know, it's sad. I mean, we make a huge contribution. Mm-hmm. I myself have written some award shows. Mm-hmm. And I know other writers that, you know, that's what they do specifically. And, you know, it's an incredible craft and art to be able to write things that sound off the cuff, you know, that sound like they just thought about it off the top of their head, and that it's funny and it's entertaining. And it's tough. And the award, to see the award shows, to see the Golden Globes, you know, take a tumble like that is sad for me. I love watching that stuff. Mm-hmm. But you have to be strong in this and say, this is a difficult time. Mm-hmm. The Oscars are coming up right around the corner. Mm-hmm. And I hear they have a plan. You know, I hope their plan works. More than anything, though, I really hope that we get back to the table. We are there, but I hope the AMPTP comes back to the table and negotiates, because this could all be settled probably very quickly with a good, intense negotiation session. And I know that's all we want as writers, as rank-and-file writers, that's what we want to see.
Why don't you give our writers some sense? I know we talked about it earlier. Why don't we go back a little bit to explain to the listeners a little bit. What does the life of a writer looks like? I mean, do they work seasonally? I know I like the concept of
the
migrant writer, sort of like the sharecropper writer. What is an average, like, say if I wanted to start and I became a member of the Guild, what does it look like? I mean, I'm assuming it's hard work, because it's not guaranteed work.
It's extremely hard. Mm. It's extremely hard. And we come from Planet Writer. You know, you know when you are a writer that this is what you just have to do in order to be happy. So it's, but my daily life is when we're not on strike, you know, I usually am writing at my own spec something, either spec feature script or spec television script. And both of those, I spend time on it. I am good at compartmentalizing, you know, so I'll do 2 hours of this and then 2 hours of that, and then take a break and then come back and do phone calls. Because if you don't have an agent, or even if you do have an agent, you still have to keep those relationships open. So make phone calls and call people, and then watch TV. You know, sometimes my husband will come home and I'm watching television. What are you doing? I said, I'm working, darn it. No, it's not like I want to sit here and watch TV. Mm-hmm. You have to watch that. You have to watch movies. You have to keep up on what it is. And even in the evening, you know, go out to screenings, go out to functions. And in between all that, I take classes in writing. I go to seminars on writing. I go to acting seminars. You know, I really want to see what everybody else is doing. So it's a very, very active life. I mean, it's not a 9-to-5 job. And I feel I have worked in offices that I work more as a freelance writer, because you are constantly looking for work. And then at the same time, you are writing. And if you're lucky enough to have something that you're getting paid for, your daily paradigm might shift, but you still do those same things. You still have to do the outreach and make the phone calls and send little notes and let people know you saw their program and how much you like that, so that you're building a network constantly all the time, building a network that changes on a daily basis. And so it's either you're getting paid to write something, or you're just writing something what's called on spec.
We're speaking to Nancy de los Santos.
Who would rather be writing.
Who would rather be writing, but at this moment is a strike leader, or strike captain, talked about it earlier. She's a member of the WGA board and part of the Latino Writers Committee. Well, we got a couple minutes left. Why don't we talk a little bit about what people and our listeners can do to support this movement, and is there a website where they folks can go, or a number that they can go in?
Absolutely. I think the best way to support us right now is twofold. To let the networks know that you miss your favorite shows. I miss my favorite shows. You know, I heard last week was the last week of the last airing of Desperate Housewives. I felt really badly about it. I just watched it yesterday because I TiVo'd it. And I said, oh my God, that's it. I'm not going to find out what happened. So let them know that you miss your shows, and that as much as you love reality, and we all do, come on, you can't watch it constantly. As human beings, we want to sit around that fire and hear the stories. We want to hear the stories and hear the human drama. And I love The Amazing Race, you know, and any kind of reality, not any kind, but, you know, some of them I really do enjoy.
Quality type.
But you can't watch that over and over again. We're humans. We want to sit around the campfire and hear the story. So definitely, please, you know, let the networks know. ABC, CBS, Fox, send them an email. It's so easy to do nowadays on the internet. And the second way is that if you go to WGA.org, they're probably very easy to find, is the Industry Support Fund. And that is, you can donate to that. That money doesn't come to us, but it goes to other people who work in the industry who are hurting also. As a union, we do give loans to our members. I wish it could be, you know, we just give them money, but, you know, we give them loans, and hopefully everybody will pay them back. But there's a lot of people who work in the industry that need help, so we ask for contributions there. Or to contribute to this wonderful station. I think KPFW is just a great voice for the worker, for the people who are struggling for equality and for bettering their lives. And I definitely support PFK, and I would hope that everybody else does too.
Well, thank you, Nancy. We've been talking to Nancy de los Santos, a person who wants to go back to her job.
I want to be writing.
Writing. And we'll take a short break, and we'll be right back for our next segment with Panama Alba on the recent subpoena of three young pro-independence Puerto Rican activists in New York City.